You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow. Last week's banning of bottles and liquids from airport carry-ons has focused on the problem of trying to outwit terrorists as they raise the ante on bomb-making technology. But amidst the calls for the installation of new high-tech bomb-sniffing machinery, were voices advising us to go back to the future, to an old but successful low-tech solution, the human eyeball. Some airports are now adopting a new method that relies on human observation called behavior recognition. You watch and observe travelers for signs of suspicious behavior, such as stress or anxiety, and then follow up these observations with a conversation that might offer further clues into a passenger's intentions. Sound familiar? Well, it was adapted from Israeli airport security and is now the basis for a new federal program called SPOT, or Screening Passengers by Observation Technique. Various transit police, U.S. Park Police, have also adopted the method. And joining us now to talk about behavior recognition is Rafi Ron, who first introduced the technique at Logan Airport in Boston. Mr. Ron is the former chief security officer for the Israeli Airport Authority at Ben-Gurion International Airport in Tel Aviv. He is now the president and CEO of New Age Security Systems, a Maryland-based company. He joins us by phone. Welcome to the program, Mr. Ron.
Thank you for having me.
Is this just a variation? Is it acceptable to call this behavior profiling?
Well, to some extent, it is. But the term profiling in this country has earned bad reputation because for too many years, profiling has been exercised as racial profiling, and therefore it has been recognized as such. What we are talking has nothing to do with racial profiling. On the contrary, racial profiling is something that we in Israel have learned the hard way could be misguiding the airport where I ran security for a very long 5 years, Tel Aviv Ben-Gurion Airport, was subjected twice to terrorist attacks. One, back in 1972, an attack that was carried out by a group of Japanese terrorists, and then later in the mid-80s, by an arriving German blonde-haired, blue-eyed terrorist. So we have learned that focusing on ethnicity and race is not exactly a good idea. Terrorists today are very aware that the people of Middle Eastern appearance draw attention from the public and from law enforcement. And therefore, they are trying to recruit and use people like those that we've seen in London, who are local breed. They've been recruiting people like John Lind Walker from California. If you remember the American citizen that was picked up in Afghanistan during the initial invasion of Afghanistan after 9/11. And there are other names. And if you look at the history of terrorist attacks against Western and Israeli targets, you would see a lot of names that they were carried by non-Arab, non-Middle Eastern, and sometimes not even Muslim people.
So what do you then focus on? What do you look for? If you're training somebody, what do you tell them the telltale signs are?
Well, first of all, in order to understand how that works, one must realize that there's a difference between the way it works in Israel to the way it works in this part of the world. And the main reason is that in Israel, 100% of the passengers are being interviewed. We have an opportunity to actually learn about the passenger through a verbal encounter across the board. And that's very, very helpful. Here in this country, because of the volume, as well as because of many other issues, including privacy issues, this is not an option. But yet, we still have a way to focus on a smaller number of people that exhibit certain types of behavior that we recognize as behavior that could be, and I emphasize the term, the word could, because it's not necessarily that anyone who exhibits those indicators are automatically is automatically a terrorist and should be treated as such. But people that exhibit certain patterns of behavior that we have recognized as relevant could become people of interest that we may want to talk to them in a very friendly a manner that would help us realize receive enough information to take a decision about the level of risk that specific passenger represents.
And what kind of behavior are you talking about?
Well, I think that for obvious reasons, I will refrain from listing out the cues or the indicators that we are looking for. I would only refer to them in general terms. And I think we all it's in our interest that we will not discuss them in details, obviously. But I would say that a few things about that. First of all, when we look at who are the terrorists that have been attacking us lately, including the 9/11 terrorists the group that was captured in London last week, what we can identify is that most of them, if not all of them, are people that do not have a long history of operational activities, terrorist operational activities. Actually, all of them, most of them, if not all of them, have never been involved in their life before in a operational terrorist activity. Secondly, we can see, especially with a group in London, we can see that the quality of training that they have received is not necessarily high. This was not the case, by the way, with the 9/11 group, but their training focused on one thing, and that is how to fly airplanes, rather than on how to overcome confrontation with the verbal confrontation with law enforcement people. In other terms, the bottom line is that all terrorists must use a cover story when they go to the airport to carry out their intention, because obviously they cannot describe their agenda in any truthful terms. So they have to come up with a cover story, and that cover story is what we are looking for and what we are trying to dismantle in the process. So to start with, we will be looking for people that exhibit those elements of stress, high stress that a first-timer, when he carries an explosive device and goes into the airport, is going through at the time. We will be looking to other kind of patterns that could be related to the type of weapon that he is using. For example, if someone attempting to attack the airport facility itself, like those suicidal terrorists that we've seen around the world, they attacking various ground facilities. There's a certain thing or a certain way that his behavior, walking, body language, use of limbs, and etc., is affected by the fact that he's wearing an explosive device under his jacket. There's a way to it might be different in the way he's dressed, but there's certainly a difference in the way he moves about and responds to things around him. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to create an environment where those patterns will be more obvious to us, and we're using that in order to detect those individuals that we want to approach, and as I said earlier, in a friendly manner, and with their cooperation, gain more information that will allow us to take the next decision.
How important is that follow-up interview? You mentioned that in Israel, everybody, 100% of the passengers go through it. How important, can you train enough people in this country to make it, to be effective observers? After all, you've been doing it in Israel for decades. How quickly can you train without, creating a giant net that nets too many false positives, as I might say?
Well, first of all, to your first question, not only that it's turned out to be a very effective measure, but I would even say that if you look at the history of aviation security, there has never been a single case where an explosive device aimed at the aircraft was detected by a machine. With all the technology that we're using, it's a strong deterrence, though. We haven't yet caught even a single explosive device in our X-ray systems ever. But we did catch terrorists, and we did stop attempted attacks through the use of this interview. A perfect example, I can talk about two perfect examples. One is a very famous case of a young Irish girl, pregnant, that was making her way to board an El Al flight in London. And she was carrying a bomb without her knowledge, a bomb that was given to her by her boyfriend, who was a Palestinian operated by Syrian intelligence. And when she came to check in for the flight, she was subjected to this interview, and through the interview, it was realized that she is concealing some very substantial pieces of information that could have been relevant to clear her. So, in this process, or in other terms, it became very clear that she is lying. Mm-hmm. Once this was this became obvious, she was subjected to a very thorough search, something that we cannot afford to do to everybody, and something that would have detected any kind of explosive device, whether liquid or a powder or anything else. And and only through this very detailed search, the very sophisticated explosive device concealed in her bag was detected.
Talking with Rafi, let me get a station break in. I'm talking with Rafi Iran, president and CEO of New Age Security Solutions in Maryland, on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. But how do you stay one step ahead of the terrorists? Is it possible that they could learn to adjust to the interrogation and to be better actors, so to speak, so they're not picked out at the airports?
Well, they can try, and I'm sure they will. Actually, I'm sure they're already doing that. But yet, as I indicated earlier, this is an inherent weakness that the terrorists have. First of all, controlling human behavior is much more difficult than abusing a recognized loophole in technology performance, because technology is very consistent. That's the good news and the bad news. Being so consistent, we know what to expect from it, but we also know what we cannot expect from it. So once the terrorists have realized that we have a certain technological weakness, like the one they have recognized when it came to liquid explosives, or the one that was recognized by Richard Reed that allowed him to create a device that he took through our security checkpoint successfully without being detected. So, but when it comes to people, It of course works very differently. When you have to confront a person on the other side, and you yourself have to exercise extreme level of control over your own mental and behavioral aspects, it becomes extremely difficult. And they fail again and again in that respect. When you look at the Richard Reed story again, that's a very good example, by the way, because he failed, and we managed to learn a lot about this case, to draw a lot of conclusions. Richard Reed, when he came to check in for the flight in Charles de Gaulle Airport, had to go through a security interview that is carried out by a private security company on inbound flights to the United States. He failed the interview. Actually, he failed badly. Badly enough that the private security person called in the French police to interrogate him. I looked at the statistics of that specific flight for over a year before this incident, and there was not even a single case when the French police was called in, to show just the level of suspicion that Richard Reed drew in this interview. The French police failed to interrogate him properly. That's another subject that we can talk about, whether the existing law enforcement culture, whether it is in Europe or here, is adequate to deal and to recognize terrorists when they see one. The French certainly failed in that and allowed Richard Reed to continue. So if we look again, we look at and compare his ability to cross the technological checkpoint was perfect.
Well, Rafi, we have only about a minute left, but I don't want to let that go. That comment you made about whether even if we adopt these systems, we're able to identify a terrorist if we see one.
It's not 100% solution, and it's not a silver bullet to all our problems, but it is an extremely important layer where we have the advantage over the terrorists. I say while with technology, the terrorists have the advantage because our technology is very stable and very consistent, and if they have the access to the information, which they have, because most of these technologies are well known, the technology can be studied in countries that are friendly to terrorists.
Mr. Ron, I want to get an answer whether you think we can train people adequately in this country.
Yes, the answer is yes. We may need to elevate the level of people that we want to recruit for this purpose. Hmm. I can tell you that in Israel, we spend a lot of resources to choose the right people for this job because it calls for above the average intellectual qualities. But it is possible. I can tell you that at Ben Gurion Airport on a good summer day, when at the peak of the season, we were carrying out about 50,000 such interviews a day.
Wow. All right.
And we managed to control that and even run exercises during this time to keep all profilers on their toes and make sure that every one of them would feel that the next passenger might be the one that that they have to pick up.
All right, Mr. Ron, we've run out of time. I want to thank you very much for taking time to talk with us. Rafi Ron, President and CEO of New Age Security Solutions in Maryland. Our program is produced by Karen Vergoth and Senior Producer Ned Heist. Our directors are Sarah Handel in Washington, Charles Berquist in New York. Our interns are Julie Liebach and Bianca Martinez. Barry Hardiman and Becky Vlamis worked the phones for us today. Surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. You can blog there and get podcasts, back editions of Science Friday. Also, Science Friday's Kids Connection is there. You can start collecting free teaching material for the upcoming school year. We turn out new material every week on Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.